Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of the Cure Talks Cancer Podcast. Each week, we'll be hearing from patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, and healthcare professionals to do what Cure does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. In this week's podcast, sponsored by Genentech, we spoke with Dr. Elizabeth Plimick from Fox Chase Cancer Center, Temple Health, and Dr. Monty Paul from City of Hope about metastatic urothelial carcinoma. The experts discussed the treatment landscape for this disease, how patients can learn more about their options, and what they have to look forward to on the horizon.
So just for some background for our patients, how common is metastatic urothelial carcinoma?
So while bladder cancer or urothelial cancer is really common, fortunately metastatic disease is a small piece of that pie, so less than 15% of patients will develop metastatic disease. That being said, it's one of the most challenging stages of the disease to treat, and so we focus a lot of our efforts on that in medical oncology.
So metastatic urothelial carcinoma is a small fraction of all cases of bladder cancer, but it's important to remember that it's lethal, and about 18,000 patients are going to die of the disease we anticipate this year alone.
Okay, and so with that, what does the treatment landscape look for this patient population?
So for metastatic urothelial cancer, over the last 5 years, we've seen a bit of a renaissance with multiple new drugs approved after a really long period of time where we didn't have new options. So in addition to the 5 checkpoint inhibitors approved for metastatic urothelial carcinoma, those are the immunotherapies. We recently had 2 targeted therapies approved, erdafitinib for patients with FGFR alterations. That's a genetic mutation in the tumor tissue, and enfortumab vedotin, which is kind of a targeted chemotherapy specific to urothelial cancer. So the landscape is changing. These new drugs came about because of clinical trials and the courage of our patients to enroll in those trials. And so we continue to develop new drugs in this space and hope the next few years continue to show new options for patients.
So we've got a number of options. It's important to remember that a lot of these have evolved recently. If you think back to the past 3 decades, we've had very limited advances until now. Chemotherapy had been the mainstay of treatment till about 2015, and now there's really been an explosion of therapies, including both immune treatment and targeted treatment.
Absolutely. And so with that, because obviously the treatment paradigm is evolving, so what is the best way for patients to learn more about their treatment options?
So for an individual patient, really the best way is to speak with your team of doctors and to really put together a team that you're comfortable with. For the bladder cancer patient or urothelial cancer patient, it typically involves a medical oncologist and a urologist, but may also involve a radiation oncologist, social worker, pain and palliative care team, endocrinology. There's a primary care we work with closely. So really pulling that team together and asking specific questions of your doctors is my best advice. I advise my patients to come with a list of their questions from themselves and their family members so that in the sort of swirl of the visit, when we're going over a lot of information, they remember what they came in wondering about. And then we try to help patients leave with written information that they can refer back to so they don't have to remember everything we speak about. But outside of the patient's treatment team, there are some really good resources. NCCN.org has good patient-facing resources. My favorite source for bladder cancer and urothelial cancer information is Beacon.org. That's BCAN.org for Bladder Cancer Advocacy Network. They have a really wide spectrum of support, materials, information, videos, patient-to-patient discussions, and lots of ways for folks to learn more about their cancer.
You know, there are a couple of different ways that folks can learn about therapy. One is through one of several public and patient advocacy groups. Bladder Cancer Network is a fantastic group that really coordinates a lot of care for patients. I also think that a good way to get information about bladder cancer therapy is to seek out a second opinion in an academic center. At academic centers like City of Hope, we have a wealth of clinical trials, and for many of us, we're really disease-specific in the sense that my clinic is comprised almost entirely of bladder and kidney cancer, and that really helps me sort of stay on top of the day-to-day advances in the disease.
Definitely. So I know you'd mentioned that you patients should be speaking with their healthcare providers and coming in with questions and a list of, you know, things that they have to ask. So why is it that that patient-physician communication is so key when it comes to deciding on what treatment regimen might be best?
I think for a number of reasons. One is every patient is a little bit different, not just in terms of their health characteristics, but also their values and their perspective and what they bring. And so helping your care team understand your values and your priorities helps us shape and craft treatments that are specific for you. And that's why that direct communication is the most important.
You know, it's really key that patients and physicians sit together in the same room, even in this COVID area. I think that that's absolutely essential. And really decide on which therapy is optimal. And that's for a number of reasons. One factor is that the different options, chemotherapy, immune therapy, and targeted therapy come with a whole host of different side effects. And getting that visual between the patient and physician is so key in understanding whether or not a patient's going to be able to tolerate a certain therapy.
Absolutely. And then, so, you know, with a diagnosis, there's also things like biomarker testing and you know, understanding PD-L1 status. Why is that important as well in determining treatment options?
So the biomarker panel that is useful for patient treatment is really evolving quickly. I would say standing here today, and this could change next week or next month, we, based on data presented a few weeks ago, may be leaning on PD-L1 status less, because it seems like chemotherapy as the frontline treatment makes the most sense. But for some patients, and it's a small fraction of patients, PD-L1 status can help determine if it's safe for them to get a checkpoint inhibitor immunotherapy upfront instead of chemotherapy. We are also now using biomarker testing to see if patients are a match for erdafitinib. Their tumor has to have a specific FGFR mutation for erdafitinib to be a reasonable option for them. That's something we like to know early on in the course of treating metastatic disease. I'm sure if we speak again next year, I'll have a different answer for you on that question. So I would just say watch this space.
Testing for PD-L1 status is incredibly key. Just to give you a little bit of background, PD-L1 is this protein that we look for in cancer. We can test it on tissues that we obtain at the time of any sort of surgery that yields cancer. And it tells us whether or not patients might potentially be appropriate to receive immune therapy for bladder cancer. If your PD-L1 scores are high up front, and if you're trying to make that decision between certain types of chemo and immune therapy, it may be the key influencer.
Definitely. So then, I mean, obviously COVID-19 is happening right now. So we would be amiss not to talk about it. But with that, obviously, telemedicine has kind of come into this emerging role now that everybody's kind of speaking with their physicians remotely. So how has telemedicine played a role in, you know, treatment and these physician patient conversations that are happening?
That's a great question. I'm really glad you asked that. So when COVID hit, you know, there was so much uncertainty. But one thing we did very quickly in a very flexible way across the globe was to pivot to telemedicine. And that's something I had really never done before and suddenly was doing for all my clinic panels starting the middle of March. I think there's so many ways we can learn from each other in terms of how to best use the platform. And I really seek feedback from my patients in terms of how it works. I think, you know, as doctors, we're just used to seeing patients in person, shaking their hand, giving them a hug. I don't think we'll be shaking hands or hugging maybe ever in the future, given where we are with COVID. And so finding ways to connect that are safe are really important. So what I try to do when I'm on a telemedicine platform, I really try to make sure my patients have their video on. A lot of them don't think it's that important, or their hair isn't done, they're not dressed for it. But that eye contact and seeing their facial expressions and them seeing mine, I find so critical to the way we communicate these really important, sometimes emotionally heavy topics around the treatment of bladder cancer. So even, you know, my patients in their 80s, if they have an iPhone, I show them how to use it so that I can see them. And I think at the end of the visit, most of them agree they're glad they turned the camera on because it was good to see each other. The telephone, there's just so much missed in just a voice encounter. The flip side of that is we do still see patients in clinic, but in our center, we're all masked and no visitors are available. So it really dilutes sort of the ability for us to connect in that clinic visit. We can't see facial expressions and we certainly can't loop in family. One of the most rewarding telemedicine encounters I had was a very heavy conversation with a patient who was in a facility, his wife who was at home, and his two children who were geographically very far apart. And we could all come together in sort of a Zoom type call and have a really good conversation where everyone is heard and heard each other. And so I think if we're going to have to flex and get more comfortable, we're going to have to take feedback and revise how we do things. But I think telemedicine is probably here to stay, and if we do it well, we can help more people with those platforms.
You know, to me, it's just so key that that patient-physician experience be in person to the fullest extent possible. So for first visits, initial visits, I'm really trying my best to make that manifest. But I'll give you an example. You know, I have a patient who is actually being seen and diagnosed and treated on the East Coast, and he really wanted to get an opinion from me out here on the West Coast at City of Hope. We did a virtual visit. We tried our best to have a video connection so that we can have that visual of his clinical status. And we used that as an opportunity to really sort of talk through the different opportunities for treatment, what he might and might not be able to tolerate when it came to therapy. So to the greatest extent that we can replicate that in-person experience through video tools and so forth, I think we need to try to strive towards that in the COVID era.
Absolutely. And so it sounds like a lot has obviously happened in the field over the last 10 years, if that. So what do patients have to look forward to in the future of metastatic urothelial carcinoma treatment?
So I think a lot of things. One is we're really eager to reduce the burden of treatment and the burden of cancer at the same time. And so the balance between side effects and how well the treatments work on the cancer is when we're always trying to optimize. So I think we're going to, first of all, know more about how to use the agents we have. We're going to know more about when to use them and how long one needs to use them for. One question we have is for patients with really nice responses to immunotherapy, which is always a great position to be in. When can we stop? Do we need to continue? How long do they need it? And I think those are some of the questions we're poised to answer in the coming months and years. In addition to that, I think we're going to be looking at whole new approaches to cancer, different agents with different mechanisms, and those are all coming up through clinical trials at centers around the world.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, one big advance in treating urothelial carcinoma is just a greater knowledge of its biology, and we're getting at this biology through something that you mentioned earlier in the context of testing for PD-L1, for instance, but we're also able now to sequence multiple genes that we know drive bladder cancer. And that's really been super helpful in terms of aligning bladder cancer patients with specific therapies. I'm finding more and more that bladder cancer patients may have mutations that aren't just seen in bladder cancer alone, but diseases like gallbladder cancer, stomach cancer, breast cancer. And I think that down the line, that may open up a lot of opportunities to borrow treatments from other diseases and use them in bladder cancer patients.
Perfect. And one way I like to just kind of bring it all together. So when it comes to treatment decisions, what would you say is your biggest piece of advice for a patient with metastatic urothelial carcinoma?
My biggest piece of advice is be honest with your treatment team about what's important to you and what you want. Call if you have questions or have side effects to therapy. We emphasize that all the time, and patients often say, I don't want to bother you. You're not bothering us. We have a whole team there that support you, and it's always better to hear about something early when we can control it or help you than later at the time of your appointment when you've already, you know, been coping with that problem for a long time. And I think, you know, again, have conversations with your family about what's important to you, because they want to be there for you, they want to support you, and being open about that, I think, is helpful. So communication is such a huge piece of this. But I think we have a lot to look forward to in metastatic urothelial treatment, helping patients live longer and better.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cure Talks Cancer podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter at @cure_magazine or Facebook at @curemagazine.